April 30th, 1982, Long Beach, California. Saul Alexander, interviewed by Kay Google.
Huh? How much do you want?
Well, tell me where you were born. Where?
Well, I was born in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Yeah, Mom.
And how did you get from there to
Long Beach? The family moved about 1909 to Oklahoma City. The state had just become such in 1907. We moved there in 1909. And we were there about 2 years.
What did your father do?
Well, he got messed up. He was a kind of a boomer. And he got mixed up in a lot of things. When we were in Chattanooga, he hooked up with the fire department. He was veterinary surgeon of the Chattanooga Fire Department. He only had a 6th grade education, but he was he really was a top flight horseman. He was still a horse and buggy stage, all the very wagons around the fire department, police department, all with horses and buggies and whatnot. Got to Oklahoma City, and this would be more about him than me, of course, but it's something that isn't widely known. Oklahoma City didn't, the state of Oklahoma didn't have that kind of extradition laws. And all the guys and courts and Barnabas and all, a fellow job in some other state, they were in the house and they wanted to save themselves. They'd gone to Oklahoma, and as long as they behaved themselves well, they couldn't be after that. It was really full of that kind of thing. But my father, some of this is hearsay, because I didn't learn it till after his demise in 1923 in London. But he got hooked up with a group that, and I don't know how they made contact right after we got there, who seemed to know about him or something, and they said there was an election coming up, and they were going to take over the city. That man, Henry Scales was his name, I remember that, because I posted the cardboard with his picture on it all over telephone poles all around. I was about 8 years old or so then, 7 or 8. And they were going to take over the town, but they said that they really thought that Oklahoma City should be the capital of the state rather than Guthrie. And so they wanted to get the capital down there. And they proposed to him that he and our associates somehow move the capital to Oklahoma City. And if he did, having success in the election, they would give him choice of jobs in his field of endeavor. Well, he was successful. He, according to what I learned, he gave some other fellow. Who he was, I don't know. They went up to Guthrie, about, I think Guthrie's 50 or 60 miles from Oklahoma City. I've been there once or twice, but, apparently, the way they maneuvered, and this is all hearsay, his companion, my father's assistant, or helper, started a fire in the same block as the castle located on, the old castle building, and everybody ran out of the castle building. It was appeared at first to be a major conflagration. And the dad apparently went in and got the seal and the charter, brought it back to Oklahoma City, and that's morning the capital of Oklahoma City. And when he, they had given him a some positions, and he saw the ragtag condition the police department was in, and we've had police work too, and he said, well, I want to be chief police because I'm going to reorganize the police department. They've got to get in uniform and have certain boots. I remember myself that you couldn't hardly tell a policeman from a cowboy because they just wore any kind of clothes, and you could tell most of them wore one or two guns and might have a badge underneath their coat, but they were a ragtag, unorganized group. And I said, well, no, that's one job you can't have, because if you know the fire, the chief of police, we're in trouble. He's a popular man in town. So they created another job, inspector police. Now, if I was an inspector police, I have a picture in the police department in that part-time. And he did reorganize it, put him in uniform and signed boots, and finally came out enough money to build a new city hall and the jail. It was badly needed. I remember being in the old jail. It was bombed beneath the building in downtown Oklahoma City on the sidewalk and down in the basement area, all the place. And so then he moved to there, because the next election his group lost out, and well, all lost their jobs, of course. And for some reason I was in his department, Oregon.
About how long was he with the police department?
Well, it was a 2-year term, right? Let's see, 1910. About 2 years. It was a 2-year election period. And it was a 3-year was thrown out of office because a new group got in. So the other part of that, to the victor long as far as them. They were moved to Portland, Oregon. I just vaguely remember how he did that. I think he worked for some company in Austin, stores and retail appliances for stores. And that's where I think he began to generate the idea of this roller cover. This was handling scales and retail mechanisms for things that stores buy, cash registers and scales and whatnot. And you see it where you could draw the same conclusion, I think. And I think we were there a little less than a year. I know my younger sister was born there, Mary, and he was along with his family. He came to San Pedro on a lumber schooner in 1912. I know that date was right. About early spring, I think. Well, I mean, it was before then. And I know we got out just beyond the barrier there where the Columbia River meets the ocean, and we haven't gone very far, and the that's the river on went kaput, the engines were out, and so it was loaded with lumber, just one of these real old small lumber schooners, but they would carry 10 or 12 passengers. Very probably rather statements three knocks, three high, and so forth. It wasn't much trim. And that was rough weather. So the company, rest of it was around, sent another one, and it was loaded too, about the same size vessel. And they told us all the way down to San Pedro. And they both are alert, I assume, but the cheapest thing that they could do was bring the cargo down and dump it out and go back, unload the cargo and fix the, for whatever reason, we arrived here and we must have been 6 or 7 days coming down. Not rough weather. I remember I got sick. I've never been on a boat in my life. And they took the red car out of San Pedro to Huntington Beach. There was a car sent down there as far as, I think, Newport or Balboa. And they lived there not over a few months. My father didn't come down with us, as I remember. He came a little later, 5 or 6 later. And I think we must have been there 3 or 4 months. I do remember that the highest sugar was finally there, and all back of us, we were in what would be called during the airfield, during the era. We went there during the boom, but that section eventually was the downtown section of the Huntington Beach Airfield. We lived in that area, somewhere in that area. And there weren't many houses there then, just a very few, and only one thing I remember really vividly. Yeah, there were good sugar beets and lima beans all over that area, especially back of us where the big acreage was. And of course, the high sugar plant eventually became an oil refinery. And I forget what year, but sometime after the 1919 discovery of oil, some years later than that, became the oil refining. That's their Colorado company. They're still active. I mean, in other parts. That refinery was abandoned some years ago.
Where was it?
It was pretty close to Main Street and about not far from east of Rolling West and west of Main Street. I could find it. I can't remember all the streets. It was set back, and there's several little streets that was intertwined there. Couldn't tell the exact location. But it was just back of Ocean Boulevard, probably a mile or less. And the only other thing I remember, there was an old maiden lady. We didn't live very far from her, but she had one cow. And she couldn't use all the milk that the cow produced, so she sold the milk. And I used to deliver the milk for a penny a pail. I carried in the little, I think they were about half gram of maybe pails. And she gave me a penny of the
Is that your first job?
I got those at the top. The first, not exactly, because I sold papers in that kind of city. I delivered papers. Now, it wouldn't have been really the first one. But,
your first job in California?
In Oklahoma City, let's say. I did sell Oklahoma, Baby Oklahoma there. So we go up here. We moved to a place on 9th and Olive. When I came back to town, I hadn't been that part of town of Long Beach for some time. I was still alive. little nostalgia in mind to all the places we had lived in Long Beach, and that one was still there on the corner of Mountain Island. I remember the people across from us were one of the two, I think, the house movers in town at the time, the McClays.
Yeah.
And they were quite funny, and we played with our children, and we were there for a while, and I think our next move was down, we lived on the pike, a place that called it the MoMA apartment, a tinderbox if there ever was one, if there ever been a fire star there, we were all burned up. But we lived there for nearly 2 years, I think. And we just lived on that beach. I just loved the water, and all of us did. And one thing I remember very vividly is the first time I had seen an airplane close up. Before any airfield that I know of around here, even the one down on Willow that this exists. But Earl Doherty was probably the first active aviator, you know, and he used to take off and land on the beach at low tide. That's the first time I had seen an airplane land or take off. Maybe the first time I'd seen a plane, I don't know. But that was Earl Doherty.
Was the Ramona near the Earl apartment?
How's that?
Was the Ramona apartment near the Earl apartment?
No, not too close. Yeah, see, the air was uptown there. We were down on the pike area. I forget where the air departments were.
But the Baldwin Convention Center is now. But the story is that Earl Doherty took off and landed in front of the Earl apartments, which his parents owned.
That's very logical and has to be true, yeah. But now I know, yes, because the convention center, we would have been only about 2, 3, 4 blocks from the convention center. We had to have that much to land. Yes, that's probably the show. Now I remember the apartments, yes. They were down just about east. A little bit west about Long Beach Boulevard.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Let's see.
That's wonderful. I mean, you actually saw it.
Yeah. And we moved up to, we live up from Ocean Boulevard, right near Elms. Between Elm and Linden, and the little L house, two-story L house. And we lived upstairs. I remember I slept in one of the so-called bedrooms that was the L part of the shape of the house. And that was about 1914, 15. That was about the time when I have to think back, and in between moving there, I think we went to Chicago, and he had to go to Chicago to a machine shop there to have this floor printed, machine bought, and the first model made. And we spent the summer in Chicago. I remember it was about, I do remember the street, St. James Place, was near Lincoln Park. So we used to go to the zoo in the park and play there, and we down to the lake where I learned to swim. And I hadn't learned yet to swim when we first hit the pipe down there. I was just playing in the waves, but my dad took me out of the shoulders and over my head and dumped me off one day and said, get out of it. So I learned to swim in Lake Michigan. Mm-hmm. It came back down, but then I think we moved up on Ocean Avenue to the Alhop. I was going to Atlantic Avenue School on 2nd Atlantic, and Marvin Miller was the principal, wonderful man, sort of a counterpart to a real fine gentleman that David Bertram was at Poly High. I graduated from there. But in the meantime, before I graduated from Atlantic Avenue High School, I was still in new pants. The day I graduated, though, I was finally in long pants, 1919. But in the interim, I had to stay out of school about a year and a half and work. I don't know what has happened. My father wasn't around, and I had to go out and help support the family. I was 13, I think. Now, this year, man may not know about it. I mean, you may not know a man of the existence of it. I worked back down on the pike. I went back down there and secured a job as a showboy in a race bead factory, where they manufactured so-called race beads. They weren't made out of race, but as I can assure you, that there were two British fellows, two Englishmen. I only remember the name of one of them. Fred Harris was his name. And the name was Sherboy. By the way, the beads were made out of some kind of starch material. I remember they had a big old bread mixer there. It was big rubber type mixers. And I used to pour the ingredients in there at the direction of my immediate superior, one of the two British boys. And they'd put a dash of real loud perfume in the stuff and color it different colors. And then the girls on the counters up there would roll it out and color them to beads on by string, so it would be a holster so they could thread them and string them. So I was a trouble. I did all the numerous work around there. And I remember Fred, too, I learned later, kind of on the side with a bookie on the British races. I think they're mostly on overseas races. And I made a magnificent sum of $5 a week for the first I suppose it was 4 or 5 months, and they gave me a 50-cent raise. And my pay Saturday at 5 o'clock, we didn't work 5 days, we worked 6 full days, was $5. Anyway, I'm a $5 gold piece and a 50-cent piece. We're paid off in gold, change. I saw very little paper money in those days. Most of it was the hard currency. $7 and 50 cent piece of the normal silver. And then, 10 half, 5, 10, $10 worth. I never earned a penny until a year later, but where that $5, though? And the other 5 and a half, and I finally got up to $7 a week. I thought I was really progressing. But that was enough to buy the food, believe it or not. So there were 5 children of us, and my mother, so it was 6 of us.
Were you the
oldest? No, I have a sister. You probably know about her. She to say of a film actor canvas by Clayton, she's a manufacturer who's special trunk. And later she got into to this special trunk where I have to go back to it. She and her now deceased husband came down from Ontario and located down in Surfside County, where it used to be called Sunset Beach, wasn't it? And he was making canvas sails and canvas covers and equipment for boats, which is a good area to bring in. And according to this story, some young surfer came along one day and said, couldn't you make me a pair of surfer trunks out of that material? And my sister apparently said, well, yes, I guess we could. But she might as well have not made a tailor-made pair of trunks on. And that was the beginning of quite a little business. We ultimately, of course, made them out of cotton, synthetics, or other types of combinations of material. I asked the other day, I stopped back by some Huntington Beach, and I was asking if they still make some of them in canvas, and apparently they do still make some of them in canvas. That would start a crowd of business. She's down there close to the surf and there, and they do a fair business right in the store there, and they manufacture them there. And she's ailing there. I don't know how long she was going along with it, but some years ago she sold out to Catalina Swimsuit Company in Bethany, and they retained her as a partner to operate that part of the business right down there. And but she began to satisfy because shortly after, they apparently changed the method and the quality of the thing of an open, and she tired herself on making the best. She didn't stand for it. She bought it back. Bought it back, and she's still there. She ships them out to Florida and Hawaii and all the surfing areas. And there's a article about her some time ago in the South Carolina. I think they have it in those scrap books or something. And I've seen her ads in the Surfer magazine. I think I have one of those. So now that we bought our groceries at $5 a week, but I met a big loaf of bread along and enough was enough for a quart. Alright, we didn't buy enough for we were excited with underprivileged Armenians, I guess, and I remember going down to Long Beach Square where Susan Robot lives, and
got a magazine here for you.
That's it down to that's that 5th and Long Beach Square around the alley. It was where I went with Hastie Brothers, Long Beach Square up there that was. And later on, I knew who the fellow was that bailed out the blue car for me. It was Skin Milk, that blue car, Skin Milk, in those days. And they gave it all out of there, and so they got Skin Milk, as such as it was. And,
who was the man who gave you the milk?
Huh?
Who was the man who gave you the milk? You said you got to know.
Oh, yeah. Later on, when I was in high school and attending a private Christian endeavor at Texan Church on 2nd Atlantic, I met two children, Lavona Law and Paul Law, and when I was there. And it was their father, I learned later, he was a man who was going off the next thing. I didn't know it till later. just a man, as far as I was concerned, a big strapping 6 foot tall. Real kindly fellow, but I just went there and gave him milk. So we didn't buy milk. Father, I think, was 8 or 10 cents a pound, and so it really supplied the food. I don't know how they raised the rent money from. The rent wasn't very high. We're down on about 120 some odd.